to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome back to another episode of Life After Corporate, my friend. And if you are here for the very first time, welcome home. Today, we will be taking a leadership journey with my very special guest, Cynthia Hardy, the author of Crossing Meridians. You are going to love this episode with Cynthia and hearing about her methodology for disrupting old patterns and creating a new CEO mindset and strategy for disrupting old patterns. So this is so much more than a checklist of leadership skills, more than an assessment like StrengthFinders, DISC, or Myers-Briggs. Crossing Meridians invites us to look more deeply at who you are and what you're creating in leadership. It's really what most of us were hoping for in our corporate careers and desperately need as we disrupt those careers and grow as CEOs. So I'm thrilled to introduce you to the creator of this seminal approach to leadership, the CEO of Pivot Global Partners and author of the new book, Crossing Meridians, Cynthia Hardy. Welcome to Life After Corporate, Cynthia.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I appreciate the invitation. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
So Cynthia, as we talk to all of our guest speakers, what was your life after corporate story? Can you share with us the pivotal moment when you made a decision to make the leap from corporate to starting Pivot Global?
Yes, I had a combination of things that came together that told me it was the right time to do it. I had been working with friends who I was in a corporate job, but friends who were starting their businesses. And I loved helping them get them off the ground, growing them, selling them. And I did it out of just the sheer joy and the challenge. And so I was doing that on the side. And at the same time, I had been moving through corporate, high-level corporate roles, not necessarily satisfied personally, and certainly not controlling my life when it came to just time and flexibility. And unfortunately, I also had a major life event with a divorce. All of those things came together, and it told me that it was time to decide what I thought I really wanted to do as opposed to what I thought I had to do. And it was a soul-searching time, and I realized that where I had wanted to start a business, helping businesses, the time was then. But I will tell you, Deb, I approached it a little bit differently because I knew if I only saw it as another job, then I didn't have the right lens. And so I thought about what a good life could look like holistically. And I placed a job and career as a couple of elements in the total picture. So I had a number of other things that I wanted to ensure were part of this good life that I had been ignoring. Time with friends, family, hobbies, community, health and wellness, spirituality, a number of those things. For each of us, it would be different, but there are some core things that matter. And my decision-making about the transition, when I was clear I wanted to do it, I equally spent time on building a platform for the kind of balance that I wanted with the good life and ensuring that as I moved to become an entrepreneur, CEO of a company that I would start from scratch, I always understood that it was a platform that allowed me to do the other things that I wanted to do. And it had to add to this sense of joy and affirm the choice I was making to do something I really wanted to as opposed to what I felt I had to do. So a little long in the answer there, but very important from a personal standpoint around how I made the decision.
No, it's so funny how our paths are so similar. You know, at the time I started my first coaching business. I was getting a divorce, having a spiritual crisis. And one of the things that I desired most was friends that I didn't work with.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we all come at this decision from a different vantage point. And I think also at the same time I was doing this, it was after a leadership journey where I was able to stretch my skills in the corporate world by launching a new business internally. And what I reached out for and why I've latched on to Crossing Meridians so heartily was I went to HR and I said, you know, I am stretching beyond my comfort zone here and doing things I have never done before. And I would like some leadership coaching. And the answer I got was, well, we don't offer that at your level. And now, mind you, I was a group vice president, two levels below the CEO, and responsible for growing a business from scratch that in 30 months we had hit $32 million and I suddenly had 53 people working for me. And so that was my wake-up call in how leadership is broken in corporate in many ways. And when I read your book, because I had taken Strength Finders, I've done Myers-Briggs and all of that, it was like, wow, I wish I knew Cynthia 10 years ago. Not that I would ever go back to corporate, but what you are sharing in Crossing Meridians is exactly what's needed and what's required. So with that, I would love for you to share how you came to Crossing Meridians and what Meridians means to you as a metaphor.
Well, first of all, I have to say thank you for the kind words, because affirmation that Crossing Meridians is a value makes my day. And I say that because as a writer and an author, you're in a tunnel and you have a view of what it is you want to convey. And for me, I got advice that for a business book, it should only be under 100 pages and I should write maybe the five steps to leadership. And I said, absolutely not. That is not how I'm going to write the book. So I wrote it the way that I thought was appropriate for me to convey what I thought was an important message. And there was risk in doing that. So to hear that the book resonates is gratifying. And how I came to Crossing Meridians, I would say that part of it is a lifetime journey of living. Part of it is corporate journey and decades of trial by error. And then part of it is decades of observing and trying some things and listening and pushing really hard on just the people element, starting with myself and then with others. So combining those things, I came to understand that having run multi-billion dollar organizations domestically and abroad and having the P&L, all the things that we do corporately, having an amazing strategy and a great operating model doesn't mean anything if you truly don't have people who are engaged and they're signing up because they're committed to doing what needs to get done. And more importantly, they're equipped to do it. And I often saw that people had the passion to do it, but their preparedness on a number of fronts was lacking, including my own at various points. And I have always had to go back and say, what is it that has a leader prepared for this challenge or for another, for the ability to move from what they've been doing to some other challenge? And how is it that you understand that there are some gaps and deficits and then close them? To go back to your point, you said that you went to HR as group vice president to talk about leadership development. And one of my basic premises in the book is that you're not going to get from the organization fully what you need. Even in organizations that have a very well-defined talent development function, much of the kind of development I'm talking about is personal to you as an individual. and you have to decide to take it on and own it and grow and develop. And you can do that within the context of your organization if they offer some of these things and accelerate what you're doing. But even if they don't do a darn thing, if there's no value placed on it, you can take the Crossing Meridians mindset and methodology and grow and develop on your own. So I wanted something that could be self-directed, that would show results. I wanted to make it personal and not be contingent on the impetus or focus from the organization you're in. And so when I put all those things together, I kept going back to what happens when you're serious as an individual about understanding who you are and what you bring to leadership. And when you take on a challenge, let's take one that is so far afield from what you're accustomed to, and how it is that you learn and perform at the same time. So I call it disruptive learning. How can you do that and then have some staying power, some stickiness to what it is that you've gained and what you've learned? And that was the heart of my thinking around Crossing Meridians. And I wanted to use stories and anecdotes and my own story as illustrations of why this is commonplace for everyone and why at the same time, anyone can use this method, applying the mindset, and be successful. So I share a method for how you actually move through discovery and planning and acting and sustaining and repeating. And I have a workbook because I think it's so important to do the work. And when you talk about planning, the workbook helps you do that. And you are then also recording and reflecting on what you've done. And it helps you to think about how you develop a rhythm of acting and reflecting and making adjustments and acting and reflecting and making adjustments. But by the way, it's all tailored to just you, which is, I think, the most important part of this. It's not that you're going to try to come up with some generic view of what being a leader looks like, or being a new CEO transitioning from a corporate role to being an entrepreneur, that there is some cookie cutter view and you're going to fit yourself within that. I certainly found earlier in my career that I was trying to do that, to figure out what are the leadership skills and competencies and how did I not just fit that, but also within the entities I was working in. Well, this dispels all of that. And it simply says, let's look at you and take all of you and figure out what you have, what you want to shape, what you want to build on, what you want to jettison, and how you can do all of that in any role that you're taking on and continually learn to get better. So that's how I've thought about Crossing Meridians. And it does have two metaphors, a dual metaphor that you'll see in the book, Deb. One is Meridian, Mississippi, which is my hometown. And my experience, my view, my life view is anchored, I say in the book, it's tethered to and forever will be tethered to that city. It is a city that is steeped in a lot. For me, it's home, it's family, it's values. It is Black folk that are moving generationally from being enslaved to sharecropping to being the beneficiaries of much of the civil rights work, and then working to become educated and creating economic mobility. That's centuries of work. And so I'm the beneficiary of all of that, and I'm helping to propel it. And I understand my place in that cycle and in that city. So it gave rise to a tremendous amount for me, but at the same time, the city has some limitations. And so when I talk about Crossing Meridians, there were deficits, and I define my own meridians, these beginning meridians in the book. Everybody has their own, but these are things that can be limiting that you want to develop and continue to move beyond. The other metaphor in the book is that of the concept of a line of longitude in navigation, or a meridian. It's north-south on the map if you're navigating. And typically you're going to be on that path and there's no need to deviate from it. It's set on the globe, circumscribed. And it's the same thing in our lives. We're on a certain path. These coordinates are set and it's tied to who we are, where we grew up, what we know, what's familiar, a certain way that we do things. But I posit in the book that you have to clearly define what your meridians are, but then also engineer your own disruption to become a more effective leader, taking on disruptive learning so that you can cross meridians, recognizing where you are, but also move to new meridians, which are different levels of leadership, competency, and thinking, different ways that you handle situations, different ways of problem solving, strategizing, influencing. But you got to see the need to do that, and you've got to understand what the other meridian could be, and then you've got to be courageous in moving from one to the other. So those dual metaphors I describe in the book, and I can tell you one of the most amazing things that happens is as I talk to groups and people about the book is to actually hear them using crossing meridians in their lexicon. I'll come back and say, hey, we talked a couple months ago. And as a team, you guys were looking at this and they it's rolling off their tongues. They're talking about their beginning meridians, their new meridians, and how they are focused on crossing meridians. And when you can help create a lexicon where people feel comfortable with understanding who they are and then exploring and working really hard to become something different, that in and of itself is incredibly, incredibly gratifying.
And, you know, that's the value of really finding a gap in the marketplace, which is kind of how we opened up this conversation, is that what you have created fills a gap in the marketplace for leaders to work on their own leadership development with a new level of understanding of where you came from, what's important to you, what your key themes and values are, and where are you going, and then crossing those meridians. So it's so accessible. And what I loved about the book itself, and full disclosure, I'm still reading, and I plan to take it on retreat with me in August. I've booked a personal retreat for a few days, and then I'm going to work through all the exercises. So I'm excited.
Excellent.
Is that you outline it in just the economy of words that you use, that everything that is said in the book is so extremely relevant and accessible and eye-opening. So where I'd like to go next is to talk about the journey of crossing meridians and the four stages in that, if you will. Could you outline for us, you know, how do you go about the process of crossing meridians as a self-study?
So this is the heart of this process. And you mentioned earlier, Deb, StrengthFinders, Myers-Briggs, and those are all great instruments. I did not think about crossing meridians as something that would be akin to those. I actually thought about it as personal self-exploration and discovery and doing the hard work, making it really simple. And I first believe that anyone would have to accept that this is a mindset before you jump into the methodology. And the mindset is one that says, I am willing to accept that where I am today can't be where I want to wind up. And that I have come to leadership with all of my influences from a lifetime. And they define me. Those are my beginning meridians. And I have to pause to acknowledge first I actually need to figure out what they are. And then I need to acknowledge the importance and the control that they have on how I see things and how I do things. Because you know, we don't just show up to work or to situations with this blank slate and then can be programmed to be a leader. We bring it all with us. And we have inherent influences and biases and ways of doing things. And if we don't acknowledge those, we're missing so much in our development as leaders. And so the mindset says, I acknowledge that. And at the same time, I am ready to challenge myself to do something better. And when you accept that mindset, You then are ready to go on the journey. And you talked about the steps that I've laid out, and each one is a process of self-discovery and action. But the first is discovery, where you're going to pause and understand, why is it that you're even open to leadership enrichment? And what's motivating you? How much are you willing to put into it? What kind of commitment are you willing to make? Are you serious about it? And when you go through that discovery process, you then take the time to dig deep, to define your beginning meridians. And when I talk about those, it's simply the constellation of all that you are that you bring to whatever situation or to whatever job or to whatever new endeavor. And that is a process that I've found for most people that's difficult to do. I've had sessions with book clubs, with teams from various companies, nonprofits, universities. As I talk about the book, inevitably the conversation about beginning meridians, when individuals are talking about their exploration, it is incredibly emotional. And I create a space where people can speak to that, and without judgment and listening intently, because what I find is that most people have not taken the time to mine and thoroughly understand their influences and who they are and how that affects them and their leadership. And this very first phase of the methodology requires you to do that and to probe deeply. When you move through that, you're going to, it's like moving through a wide funnel at the top, spinning out some things. And at the very bottom, you have no more than 5 beginning meridians that you have defined. And for me, I'll share with you, Deb, and I have it in the book, that it was a difficult process. I had to really think about those influences that carried all the way through, these common threads throughout life. And I knew one was my hometown, Meridian, Mississippi, as a beginning meridian. And I knew that money, which was poverty, we were desperately poor, that carried through. Education was so important. Many did not have it. And understanding that it was a catalyst and being fierce about figuring out how to acquire an education as a way to better not just my life, but many around me and my family and extended circle, to bring them along too. So education was so important. Faith was critical. I realized that I had this anchor of faith that was very solid, but also was very insular. And so I didn't know about other faiths and other religions. And it took me going as an exchange student to Japan at 16. And my host brother being Buddhist, and he's a Buddhist monk today. It's been a lifetime of learning through him and others that have expanded and helped me cross that beginning meridian of faith. And so I explored those things. But for each of these things that you come up with, you then are very thoughtful about the actions that you're going to take so that you are moving to a higher level of thinking, development, execution. And you're going to envision what that needs to look like for you. And then very importantly, you're going to think broadly about the actions you can take, but you're then going to sift through those and pick just a few of these very targeted things that will move you from your beginning meridian to your new meridian. And you do this in a methodical way, again, tailored to you. The beauty of it is that I really focus on how it is that you sustain this, recognizing that at the point in time that you do your discovery, you might define beginning meridians that are appropriate at the moment, but for whatever reason, they could change. And so I share some new meridians, for instance, beginning meridians that I had to take on later in life. And they were ones that required work, but they didn't present themselves earlier. They did later. So you have to continually evaluate, where am I? What challenges am I facing? Where do I need to grow and develop? And let me continue to look at my beginning meridians and how I'm going to cross to new meridians. As you do that, you're going to, some of these things will move into your DNA. And so you're going to be repeating these cycles, their learning cycles. One of the most important things I would say is that I show you how to anchor any action that you're thinking of taking in what I call the prime meridian of leadership. Going back to the navigational metaphor, ballast in a ship is the heavy material that you put to make sure the ship doesn't capsize. It's like stone or something really heavy that they put in the bottom of the ship. And it keeps it basically steady. And I talk about the prime meridian of leadership, this ballast, being the combination of three things for any leader. One is empathy, two is openness, and three is resiliency. And I have a theory that the combination of those three things form ballast for any leader. It is that thing that keeps us from tilting too far one way or the other. And it keeps us centered and grounded. And so as you think about actions that move you from your beginning meridian to your new meridian, I show you how to evaluate each of those actions and determine if they are going to build empathy, openness, and resiliency. And I can tell you, I think that as leadership, it's ballast and it's so important. But I also see increasingly that there's not enough of those attributes in our leaders today. And if we've got the opportunity to figure out how we want to grow and develop as leaders, I sure want to help everyone think about how we can do it, incorporating those dimensions into our leadership, because I think it makes a huge difference. But that's the mindset and that's the methodology for crossing meridians.
That was a beautiful overview. Thank you, Cynthia. You know, in the defining your original meridian, what do you call the original?
The beginning meridians.
The beginning meridians. It was just so interesting to look back and realize, you know, how my first forays as a leader was so defined by my childhood experience. It was really eye-opening. And as I now look to, and many of our listeners are too, you know, have moved from leadership in the corporate world to now starting their own businesses, a lot of our leadership mindset is focused on us, right? So as you were speaking, I was thinking about self-empathy and, you know, self-understanding, openness, and of course, a lot of resiliency required as a CEO. I'm wondering if you have any stories to share with us how you have worked with other female CEOs or men to move from the leadership mindset that they had in the corporate world to a CEO mindset that they now need to occupy in their new role?
Oh, gosh. Yes, absolutely. I thank you for this question because this is the world in which we exist, having done corporate roles and moving into an entrepreneurial space, often not knowing how to do it, but very clearly convicted that we should do it. And the example I would give you, I would say, of an individual who's in a corporate role and then decided to move into her own space. And I took her informally through this crossing meridians methodology, essentially. And we focused on her beginning meridians for this transition. And it was a difficult conversation for her, because she had been and is incredibly proficient in what she had been doing in a CFO role, C-suite, for many years in many different organizations, and had not broken down her experiences and thought about what will I need to do differently when I become my own boss. And when we started talking about beginning meridians, the difficulty was that it was all of the corporate speak and the corporate perspective. It had none of the view of what it might be, life might be like as an entrepreneur, and how the relationships would be different, partners would be different, the day-to-day working environment, the questions that you're being asked to answer, all of those things would be different, but she didn't really have the lens around that. And so we actually went through many rounds of conversation in order for her to define her beginning meridians as she was transitioning from becoming a corporate CFO to becoming an entrepreneur. And in that conversation, it was very clear that she had a mode of working that was supported by certainly a lot of people, very methodically driven. And as she thought about it, she said, I've got to move faster. I've got to move quicker. I've just got to hustle. And it isn't that I didn't have to hustle in the other job. It was just very different. And I had a lot of support and I had whole departments. And more than that, I had the time to think. And it looks like I'm not going to have the luxury of time in the way that I had it before. That was her one big aha. But it also was very clear that some of the deliberation that she was accustomed to, she wouldn't have time for. But more importantly, she was going to need to make decisions with less information. And that was very, very uncomfortable for her. And so as we defined her beginning meridians and then talked about new meridians, it was around capabilities and the ability to be nimble and use less information in making decisions and relying more on others and still being in that gray area, making decisions was going to be very important. And we focused then on actions that would support that. And we went in deep and it was real because it was in the context of her actually starting her business. And so we take key things that she was deciding. And for some, they weren't being decided because she didn't have full information. And in a prior world, that would be okay. In this world, it was going to be her death knell. But that process in the first, I would say, 3 to 4 months of her transitioning and using the crossing meridians methodology allowed her to see some things clearly, move faster, and then be really intentional about how she could build in the ability to do some things differently that would allow her to develop as an entrepreneur. And I'm so delighted to say that she joined me a few months ago in a conversation about crossing meridians that we were having with some college students. And she described this process and how she needed to see herself differently, first be honest about what she had done in her career and celebrate that, and then see what was going to translate well as an entrepreneur and what wouldn't. And the best way for her to see that, she recognized, was to actually do it. So it wasn't conceptual. And so I was there with her as she was making that transition for the first few months. And I actually think now she can teach crossing meridians because she's actually done it. And I see her doing the repetition now. But that's maybe the best example I could give you.
That's a fabulous story because, you know, what got you there doesn't get you here is the bottom line. And there's just so much self-growth and everything. I always say entrepreneurship will kick up all your stuff. So if you have issues around perfectionism or procrastination, and of course, you know, going from corporate where you have teams of people, you have a sales force that sell your services, you have, you know, graphic designers, you have your finance partners, your marketing partners, and now it's you and you're making all the decisions. And so some of the historical patterns can really trip you up as you start moving forward. You know, for me, I had a fear of public speaking. And that was something that I had to get over and get over very quickly, because if people couldn't discover who I was and that I was here, then there wasn't going to be a whole lot of business that closed as a result of that. So it's interesting. So how do we, let's leave people with one exercise of contemplation that they can create on their own, or, and certainly we want everyone to go and pick up the book, Crossing Meridians. It is a journey into self-discovery and stepping into a bigger version of who you are and who you need to be at this next phase of your leadership journey, whether you're still in corporate or you're CEO of your own business. So where is the starting point if we were to leave people with something that would give them some immediate insight?
I would encourage our listeners to, whether you're starting your transition from corporate to entrepreneurship or you're already an entrepreneur, I'd encourage you to think about one challenge, one big decision that you have to make and use that as the framework for exploring your beginning meridians, your new meridians, how you would cross meridians, the actions you would take, and then how you would sustain it. Because that one big challenge is going to tease out what's really significant that you bring to the table and where you need to develop. So let me give you an example. Let's say that you have decided that you're going to raise money and you're going to be a tech company and you got seed round funding that you want to put in place. Having made the decision, now you got to actually do it. You've got to have your plan ready. You've got to put together your pitch deck if you're using that. You've got to figure out who you're going to talk to. And maybe you're really, really uncomfortable asking people for money. And maybe you've never done it before. So if you've made the decision that you're going to use other people's money largely for this venture, then you've got to take some action. If that is the decision, for instance, now you've got to decide, in my beginning meridian, what is it in my DNA and in my makeup that I bring to this that is going to give me the leg up and I can leverage these skills all day and it's going to help me with this race? What is it in my DNA and my makeup and the way I've been doing things that is going to hold me back, that will whisper in my ear, wrong way. It will whisper in my ear, don't go ask. Whatever it's going to do, I've got some things that are in my DNA and my makeup that will slow me down. And then I've got some things that I can do, but maybe I'm just not thrilled with them. But when I begin to look at all of those things, I'm going to define my beginning meridian when it comes to being able to tackle this challenge. And then I'm going to say that I've got to do some things differently, one or two things very differently, because I want to be successful with this challenge. I am going to raise this seed money. So what is it that you have to do differently? And pick the thing that is the most difficult for you that will have the greatest impact if you do it well. When you envision what that is, now you got to say, okay, to get from A to B, let's say I hate asking for money, but I need to raise $300,000. Now, how am I going to do that? You're going to pick some very specific actions that will challenge you that are targeted to meeting that goal. And when you choose those actions, you're then going to be time boxed in what you're going to do and when you're going to do it. You're going to think about where you need help. You're going to put together a picture that moves you from A to B. And then you're going to try some things that are very uncomfortable. You're going to continue to evaluate if they're working or not. Are you getting traction? And then you're going to say, okay, have I rewired myself so that I've got some skills here that I didn't have before and I can see it showing up in this business in a positive way? That's a very specific example of what I would challenge everyone to do. Just pick one thing that is so important to the running of your business that you've got to sit down and think it through and then act, and you owe it to yourself. And crossing meridians can be a framework that you can use to do that.
That's brilliant, because there's so many uncomfortable moments when you're making this transition, and everyone has a different beginning meridian and different experiences and where they'll feel comfortable and where they'll feel out of their comfort zone. And whether it's, you know, talking to strangers. Some of my clients, when they first get started, say, you know, I'm not comfortable talking to people I don't know. And that's certainly one that we need to get over as business owners. Speaking, you know, looking for speaking engagements, pitching yourself as a speaker or pitching yourself to investors, all things that will feel uncomfortable because they're first. So I love your methodology, Cynthia. I think it's valuable for everyone listening. I particularly resonated with it. I think my clients are going to resonate with it as well. So how do we keep in touch with you? What if we want more, Cynthia Hardy? We want to learn more about crossing meridians or working with you. How do we do that?
Well, I would love to talk with anyone that wants to talk about the book or how the book really gives you an idea about what we do within my company, Pivot Global. So for the book, you can go to Amazon.com, type in Cynthia Hardy or Crossing Meridians, and you're gonna, it'll be the first thing that pops up. And you can get the book in ebook, paperback, or hardcover formats. I would also ask, if you get the book, to please write a review on Amazon. I am learning that marketing around a book is a beast. And I'm learning so much around this, but the Amazon reviews do count. Now, what you see with Crossing Meridians, this mindset and methodology around personal learning, development, and enrichment, it's first of all going to be the first in a series of books. So there will be more to come. And what you will see is that this is part of what we do within my company, Pivot Global Partners. So 7 years ago, when I transitioned from the corporate environment to my own space, I started Pivot Global. And in Pivot Global, we focus on the people and processes part of business, not technology. And what we do is listen very closely with seasoned people who are probably much like our clients, have sat in their shoes. And we understand through a diagnostic process and assessment process where they are. But more importantly, we craft where they want to go, we build where they want to go, and we implement with them. And we do that in three ways. One is around innovation. So for growth stage companies, we help with operational maturity for everything they're doing. With mature companies, we help them bring in innovation and adapt it. And then we help them kind of shake loose sometimes just their performance if they're stuck in a given area. And that's around significantly improving what they have or coming up with something new. In our leadership pivot, we have assessments. We work with individuals, teams, and the enterprise. We come up with workshops, training, coaching, development, those things that are needed to ensure that leaders are prepared. And then in the world of diversity, equity, and inclusion, we are very focused on ensuring that this work is part of the central strategy of an organization, embedded in the foundation, not some initiative that's over on the side. So we know how to place it within the organization, doing that, understanding where the organization is around understanding, acceptance, and preparedness to lead, and then crafting the very targeted things an organization needs to not just have statements on the internet, not just commit a lot of money, but to seriously move the needle on DEI. I will tell you, Deb, we also find increasingly that organizations are talking about all three of these in tandem, and they want to stagger the work. Why? One, boards under ESG are asking about DEI. They're constantly focused on leadership in an organization. And they absolutely are focused on innovation. So you've got board attention, you've got a competitive environment that demands your good on these same fronts, and then you've got just the operational pressures. When you put that together, we find clients are very focused on the innovation leadership and DEI pivots singly or in combination. That's what we do. And the Crossing Meridians methodology is used in our leadership pivots and in our DEI pivots. And innovation to some extent. So it is foundational to much of what we do, very integrated. I would welcome an opportunity to talk with you about the book, about Pivot Global. You can call me. My cell is 404-980-3345, or you can email me at cynthia@pivotglobal.com. And I'd love to spend some time with you exploring where you are, your needs, and how we can help you.
Sure to put those links in the show notes, Cynthia. And I'm sure there are listeners here who can refer. I know with all the focus around DEI and the pressures around, you know, from the board level to employees who are evaluating right now, the control is really in the employees' hands of what offers they start to accept, and suppliers and partners are also requiring not just lip service, but real demonstration of diversity in action. So thank you for mentioning that. It's been such a pleasure spending time with you here today. I wish we had more time. I know that there's so much other ground that I'd love to cover with you. But thank you for sharing your perspective on leadership and the process of crossing meridians. Thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you, Deb. I appreciate the invitation.
It's our pleasure. And with that, my friends, that's it for this episode of Life After Corporate. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.